Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. You're listening to Leadership Focus, an internet radio show geared to everyday leadership, both at work and throughout your life. Each week, we present you with interesting ideas, interesting guests, and actionable strategies to help you be an incredible leader with a more balanced life. I'm your host, Lisa Pasbjorg, Executive Coach and CEO of Focus Coaching, a leadership coaching and training firm based in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And tonight our topic is What the World Needs Now, the Transformative Power of Creativity in Business. And our guest is Josh Linkner. Josh is the founder, chairman of the board, and former CEO of ePrize, the largest interactive promotion agency in the world. Over the past 12 years, ePrize has hired over 1,800 professionals and currently provides marketing services for 74 of the top 100 brands. Josh led the firm from its inception to its being ranked the number one fastest growing and the number three overall promotion agency by Promo Magazine. Today, ePrize has offices in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Dallas, San Francisco, Detroit, Atlanta, and London. And Josh has launched his fifth company, the venture capital firm Detroit Venture Partners. His most recent book is Disciplined Dreaming, a proven system to drive breakthrough creativity, which leads us to our discussion tonight. Welcome, Josh.
Thanks so much. It's really a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you here. Your background is so amazing. When and how did you first discover you were an entrepreneur?
Well, you know, my background originally was as a jazz musician, and jazz musicians improvise a lot. So what we do is we have a little bit of structure, and then we make the rest up as we go. And if you think about it, that's very much what entrepreneurs do every day. You know, we maybe have a vision, or we're going after a specific market or a customer segment, but the rest we improvise. And so I had a very strong connection to entrepreneurship by way of jazz.
Wow. You know, that was one of my later questions, because I was thinking about the connection, and not only do you have to make it up as you go along, but you have to make it up in relationship with others, and also in relationship with the melody. You know, often it's coming back to, again and again, a melody or a musical line.
You know, I think that there's such a great parallel these days between jazz music and the current business world. You know, the world has become so complex and things are moving so quickly and there's such ruthless competition that the old rules of engagement really don't apply anymore. There's a new set of skills that are needed. And in this new world, it's moving so quickly, you can't just follow an operating manual to succeed. And what business leaders really need today is, again, the ability to improvise, the ability to innovate in real time. And so to me, that's been a wonderful parallel. And I think that we can learn a lot from what jazz musicians do every day. Because sometimes you need to be a soloist and stand out and really shine on your own. But more often than not, it's about laying back and supporting the success of others and listening. So, again, this was my MBA was in smoky jazz bars.
That's great. Well, you've been described as an early internet marketing visionary. Tell me about that.
Well, back in 2005, early 2005, I really started getting involved in the internet. You know, so I have a jazz background. I've always been a computer geek, and I have an advertising degree. So it looked like a perfect home for me. And I started looking at websites, and these were very early versions of commercial websites. And it turned out that only 2% of companies actually had a website in that time. And I realized, I mean, it didn't take really a genius to say, well, pretty much every company is going to have a website at some point. It just was too sophisticated and too strong of a marketing vehicle. So I launched a company called Global Link New Media in 1995, originally building brochureware-type websites. And that evolved. We did e-commerce and a number of other things, and I ended up building that company and selling it to a publicly traded firm in 1999. But it was really neat, you know, being on the forefront and watching the enormous sea changes that the internet created.
Yeah. Interesting. That's a long time ago. That really was early internet. You know, I remember talking to some colleagues who were talking about this guy that they know who's really successful not as a coach, which of course is what I do, but more as a working with coaches to help them grow their business. And he said, you know, he started out without a website and with a mailing list of about 10, and
he was fine, you know, starting out, and he was telling people that he didn't need, you didn't need a website to get going, and that was 10 years ago. And I think the world has changed. I think if you don't have a website, people think, is this a growing business? Does it exist? Is it really a professional firm?
Well, that's right. And, you know, so much else has changed, too. The financial crisis of 2008 and 2009 have really punctuated the end of an era. And to me, they've signified the beginning of a new era. And in this new era, original ideas and imagination, innovation, have become the currency of success. You know, when there's a financial crisis, most companies do the first thing that everybody else does, which is cut costs. And that's fine, and it might drive some temporary profits. But really, for any company to grow, for any company to thrive and win long term, you have to innovate your way to success. You can't cut your way to success. So, you know, the book that I just came out with that you mentioned earlier is about that. It's about helping people figure out how to best innovate, how to put the jazz into their business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's quite a departure from your last book. What changed for you to make you write this book? Is it about the economic crisis and the critical nature of changing behavior in businesses, or did something else happen?
Well, I had a couple realizations. One is clearly in the business world, we need creativity desperately. But I also realized that, unfortunately, creativity in the U.S. is on the decline. So we have a desperate need, but we're ill-prepared to reach that challenge. And the reason is not because human beings are less creative, because we as human beings are all incredibly creative. The problem is that we're brought up in school systems that teach us to follow the rules, guess what the teacher knows, there's only one right answer, and don't make mistakes. And then we take jobs in big bureaucracies, and we have, you know, organizations around us. And essentially, life kind of beats the creativity out of us. And if you think about it as like a muscle, we mostly have underdeveloped creativity muscles. And any one of us have the capacity to build that muscle mass, that creativity muscle mass, but most people don't have a system to do so. So the reason I wrote the book really was to help make the world more creative. I figured that if I could even make a small impact on the world of both business and families and organizations, that those would go on to do amazing things. And so I tried to boil down my experience and did a lot of research and personal interviews with other leaders and tried to give it as a gift to the world to try to, again, make the world more creative.
Nice, nice. So, you know, I'm going to ask you about the process, because I know this book is really about not just the concepts, but there's some really tangible stuff that people can use in their business. But I'm also wondering why it is that the business world especially needs it now. And even to go as far as Michigan, you know, why does Michigan especially need creativity now?
Well, let's talk about Michigan. I'm glad you said it. You know, I'm a Detroiter, and born and raised in Detroit. And, you know, I think about our evolution, and I feel that we've had a couple distinct chapters in our story. You know, back in the day, we started out with chapter one with this unbelievable entrepreneurial fire. We were swarming with creativity. And as a result, you know, we had pioneers like Henry Ford and others that helped put our region on the map that really made a difference. And if you think about the building blocks, again, it was doing things differently and breaking the mold and inventing a whole different industry. Well, unfortunately, then we went into chapter two. And chapter two, I kind of think of it as like a dark chapter where we got caught up in entitlement and we thought about bureaucracies and we cut costs and we managed employees and it was almost like, you know, the dark side of growth rather than empowerment. And rather than being creative, we went to the other way. We went to systems and processes, et cetera. And I think that's what really created a lot of our the problems that we face in this region. And I think, by the way, that this region is a microcosm for the rest of the country. So we had this dark chapter two. Today, I believe that we are walking into this new chapter, chapter three. And in chapter three, we have a brand new opportunity. It's kind of up to us. We can all point fingers at one another and cast blame and cry in our soup and talk about good old days gone by, or we can use this as our defining moment. And I choose the latter. I choose to use this as our defining moment, and I think that if we can reconnect to our creative roots, reconnect to that entrepreneurial spirit that put us here in the first place, I really believe that that will be the saving grace that will allow us to to grow out of the challenges that have fallen upon us.
Yeah, I like your phrase that Michigan and certainly Detroit is a microcosm of other places. I think it's a perhaps more extreme version than other places, but yeah, there's so much promise, there's so much talent, there's so much creativity, but you're right, I think people have been, it's just been taken away from them. They've been discouraged from taking risks and haven't been encouraged to get that fire and get that spirit back. I'm excited about some of the work that I see going on with organizations like New Enterprise Forum and Spark, some of the technology centers that are coming about in Michigan. It's really bubbling and really perking. I mean, that just excites me totally. Are you seeing things like that too?
I am. You know, as you mentioned, I moved to the dark side. So after 20 years as an entrepreneur, I've become a venture capitalist. And actually, you know, I say that kiddingly because what a wonderful privilege to help build creative businesses. Anyway, we're investing in the city of Detroit. And, you know, there's all kinds of naysayers, you know, in media especially, talking about how bad things are. Well, over the last 4 or 5 months, we've looked at 130 deals, 130 bright, talented people pitching their dreams. We have five term sheets out, in other words, offers to invest in five of them, and a number of other ones that we're about to invest in. So the talent is absolutely here. The attitude is here. The spirit of rebuilding our great city is here. And I really believe it's going to happen. I feel like we're at a tipping point. And I think, you know, in a few years, hopefully, if you invite me back on your wonderful program, we'll be talking about a whole different landscape in downtown Detroit and in the region and in the country.
I think you're right. And I think, you know, there are exciting new ideas. There's bargains to be had in fabulous real estate. There's just all kinds of opportunity here. There's a riverfront. There's the opportunity to connect the city with the suburbs in exciting ways to get people in and out along the corridor. It's just really an exciting time.
You know, I really look at it like it's a privilege. I mean, you know, in one's lifetime to have really the privilege of helping to rebuild a great American city is just unbelievable. And I truly hope that the legacy that I'm able to leave for my kids, as well as this region, is playing a small part in the renaissance of Detroit. And like I said, I really do think that if we can create some amazing things here, that can have a dramatic impact. And I look at Seattle, for example. Think about the impact that two companies made on that region, Starbucks and Microsoft. Two companies created thousands of jobs, billions of dollars of economic stimulus. They've spawned new entrepreneurs. They've created tax base. They've created hope. Incredible impact from two successful companies. That's our you know, purpose and mission here in Detroit now, is to help, you know, launch great companies that can have that type of dramatic impact in our region. And just sure is exciting. You can feel it in the air.
You know, I'm sure there are many people listening that are very well-versed in venture capitalism and how that works. But there may be people that don't realize what the role of venture capitalist is, particularly now in this economic climate. Can you sort of fill people in that are not as familiar with it, as how that works, how that's a springboard?
Sure, you bet. So, I'd say in our case, we're investing in seed and early-stage technology companies. And so we're hoping, you know, kind of all things digital. So it could be social media or, you know, e-commerce or web transactions, things like that. And so what we do is we not only invest dollars, which, you know, we're happy to do, but we also invest a lot of time and support and effort to help our portfolio companies win. And if you think about it, early-stage companies, just like a baby, really like an infant child, they have unbelievable promise, yet they're very fragile. And so our whole, you know, approach is to provide coaching and mentorship and a lot of resources, even beyond just dollars, to help these companies thrive. And that's everything from helping them recruit great talent, helping them win new customers, helping them develop great sales and marketing materials, helping them build websites and other types of technologies. So the idea is taking all the work that we've done and our experiences, my partners and I, and applying it to these companies that we invest in and helping them become the next Groupon or Facebook or Microsoft right here in our region.
Yeah. So do your partners have similar backgrounds then, Josh?
You know, they do. I'm privileged to my partner. I have two partners. One is Dan Gilbert, and Danny is the owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers, as well as the chairman of Quicken Loans. And truly, I'm so privileged to work with Dan. He's a brilliant visionary, one of the most incredible business leaders I've ever known. He's been very successful. And again, he's passionate about helping great entrepreneurs win. He doesn't collect sports cars or something like that. He collects, he just loves the entrepreneurial process, and that's where he loves investing his time and energy. My other partner is a guy named Brian Hermelin, who's an incredibly thoughtful, wonderful business guy. He's had a tremendous amount of success. He was the CEO of a freight airline for a while, and he runs a private equity fund. So the three of us are just so passionate and committed to rebuilding this region through entrepreneurship, to helping to back and grow great companies. And it's a lot of fun along the way. And, you know, back to creativity, these things really work in harmony because we feel that by taking on big industries and doing with a fresh approach, by not being afraid to break the mold, by refusing to follow the status quo and refusing to follow conventional wisdom, that's how we think we can make the biggest impact. So by injecting not just dollars, but experience and creativity in these companies, we think that's the success formula right there.
Well, what a wealth of knowledge you three guys have to offer startups. It would be such an advantage for them, not just to get funding from you, but to get that kind of support, really wraparound kind of resources. It's great. I'm excited about hearing that. Really great. So tell me more about the book and how you would see businesses using this book. If I were to recommend this to one of my clients, what could I tell them about it?
Well, again, the world has become, you know, increasingly competitive. And, you know, in different areas of business, you need different tools in order to win. If you were in the agricultural age, you'd probably need good seeds and sunlight and irrigation and things like that. Well, today, the most important skills that you can develop in yourself and in your team is the ability to think differently, the ability to innovate, be curious, to have original thoughts, and really tap into your imagination. This is a good news, bad news thing. The good news is, as human beings, we all have this. A recent study by Harvard indicates that 85% of creativity is learned behavior. In other words, the nature versus nurture argument has been solved, and that we all have an unbelievable power to grow our creative capacity. So that's the good news. The bad news is that, again, over time, we haven't really developed those skills. Most of us haven't developed those skills. So I think the book is an important tool to help businesses win, to help your clients go on to the next level, to improve their success rate, to grow their businesses, and ultimately reach the goals that they're working so hard to achieve.
So does the book take them through specific steps that they can use to grow their creativity then?
Exactly. So I'm making the reference back to jazz for a minute. In jazz, 99% of the notes that we play are made up. But there are 1% of the notes on the written page that are really important, and they provide a structure and a scaffolding that allow the musicians to work together and be really creative. So I tried to create that same type of concept in the business world. And, you know, in business, there's processes and systems for everything. You know, you got ISO 9000, there's systems to, you know, how do you answer the phone, how do you set the alarm. But there really is no such system for creativity and innovation. So through my research and experience and interviews with over 200 leaders and artists and musicians, I boiled all this wisdom down into five simple steps. So it's a five-step process that is very fun and simple to follow. It doesn't require a master's in fine arts. You know, any one of us can tap into this creativity as long as we have a little bit of support and a little bit of systematic approach to doing so. And I think that's what the book will provide readers. It'll provide them a scaffolding or a framework to let their creativity shine.
Josh, why do you think your companies have been so successful?
Well, as I said, you know, I've built four companies over the last 20 years. And I asked that question to myself, and that's partly why I wrote the book, because a hard look in the mirror realized I'm not that great of a manager. I'm a lousy finance guy. I'm a terrible detail person. My operational prowess probably stinks. So I went through all these things, and I said, well, how come I've had a lot of success when I'm kind of a lousy business leader in many cases? And really what I found, though, that the one ingredient that allowed me to win was back to this concept of creativity. I realized that because I looked at things differently, because I wasn't afraid to take risks, because I wasn't afraid to break the mold, and I loved sticking a thumb in the eye of the complacent incumbents, that's what allowed me to win. And so that was the knowledge that I wanted to share with others.
I hear that really clearly. I also am wondering and thinking, I'm hearing that there's this element of playfulness and fun in your companies as well.
Well, thank you. And that's absolutely true. We love, pranks on each other. And we create a very fun work environment. It's colorful. It's vibrant. You can just feel the energy. And if you want people to do brilliant creative things, you have to create a fun environment for them. It's funny to me, most corporate America, frankly, looks like a sensory deprivation chamber. There's windowless offices, there's bad lighting, there's fluorescent, there's peeling wallpaper, and then we bemoan and we wonder why our teams come up with ho-hum ideas. Well, what about taking your team to the art museum to brainstorm your next product launch? Or what about spicing up the joint a little bit, not just even in physical characteristics, but in your culture? And I think that spirit of playfulness, that fun, the ability to go out on a limb in the same way that a kid does, that's where you tap into the magic. And that's something that I strongly believe is an important ingredient in the future. Because the competitive advantages of the past don't exist anymore. You can't win by cutting price. You can't win by being the lowest cost manufacturer. You can't win by controlling geography or information. So these advantages are gone. So how can companies and individuals win? The only way that they can win, the only sustainable advantage over the long term, really gets back to ideas and imagination and creativity.
Yeah. I love that idea of taking people out. Of course, obviously looking at the environment and creating a fun and creative environment. But in coaching, I'll often use this, and this is especially interesting when I've got somebody who's an executive and they're pretty formal and pretty defined in the way they do things. And I'll get them to physically move. They're stuck on something. And I'll say, where are you? And I'll have them move across the room. I'll have them go outside. I'll have them, change their position, lie down on the floor. And it's really fascinating how our mind looks at things differently when we are literally in a different position or in a different place or looking at something differently. So interesting stuff, really interesting. Yeah, I would agree. Most offices are not conducive to being creative. Absolutely.
You know what's funny is, I've had the privilege to meet with a lot of great companies. And so even in the midst of all this economic catastrophe, some companies have had enormous success. I mean, you look at Groupon, or you look at Zynga or Facebook all kinds of wonderful, Quicken Loans, amazing success. And when you go to these places, it doesn't feel like a dour, you just came from a funeral. It's the opposite. You have a spirit of play. The environments are colorful and rich, and they've built cultures that nurture and encourage creativity. They encourage responsible risk-taking. They almost create like a greenhouse that allows people's spirits to grow. And I think there's such a great lesson there to be learned. You don't have to be an internet company to do that. You could be in the most old school industry, but still learn from what's working in the digital age, that what's working to motivate a creative class of workers to contribute their highest work.
Sure. Well, look at Zappos, look at Zingerman's, look at Emma. All those companies are bringing out the best in people in creative ways. And they're so nice to work with. The people are incredible to work with in all of those companies. But they're happy. They're enjoying it.
Yeah, these things don't have to conflict. I mean, having a wonderful time and enjoying yourself and having business success are not at odds with each other. In fact, they're in total harmony. It's funny you mentioned the concept of play. I've always wondered, what if you switch the words? So when we're a kid, we go out to play. And when I do music, I play music, or you play a sport. Well, then why do we go to work? I mean, what a drag. That sounds terrible. It's almost like you're trading your soul for dollars. I mean, what if you literally said, I'm going to not have a workforce, I'm going to have a play force. Bye, honey, I'm going out to play today. Oh, you got a problem? Instead of working through the problem, why don't you play through the problem? I mean, think what a simple terminology change could do to everyone's attitude and approach to their work. If you make it fun and engaging, guess what the output's going to be? Brilliant creative ideas.
Yeah, I like that. I'm going out to play. I'm going for my play day. So, Josh, you're clearly a guy that wants to have an impact. And I think you've talked about this a little bit, but I'd like you to sort of sum it up or maybe expand on it a little bit. If all the things you're doing could play out in the best possible way, what would that be for you?
Wow, what a great question. Well, I would say two things. One is hopefully through a lot of speaking and my book and you know the work that I've put into creativity, I hope to make a difference in people's lives. I hope that both readers and you know, as this kind of message spreads throughout the world, that people approach their work differently and they do have fun and they do start to tap into this amazing gift that we all have of being creative. And I think that I'll hopefully have an impact on people that I may never meet or never know that impact, but in a little way I'll know that I've contributed to the world. On a more local level, with my partners at Detroit Venture Partners, we hope to invest in a lot of businesses. I mean, over the next 10 to 20 years, we hope to grow one of the largest and hopefully most successful venture firms in the country. And so that would equal deploying hundreds of millions of dollars in the city of Detroit to not only create jobs and tax base, but to create hope and to create density and revitalize an amazing American city. And so if it's 10 years from now and I can drive down Woodward Avenue in Detroit and instead of seeing vacant buildings and broken glass, I see vibrant, creative people running around and I see a sense of vigor and energy and I see success and I see, job and wealth creation, boy, to me that could not be a better gift to know that I've had a little hand in making the world a better place.
Wow, I like that picture. That sounds great. I wish that for you. I wish that for all of us. So, Josh, what's next for you? I know you're always doing many things, but what's next?
Well, the nice thing about the work that I'm doing is that I get to meet with and work with brilliant entrepreneurs, and we've got all kinds of great businesses that we're about to launch. So I'll continue to work with them and invest in them and support them. I'll continue writing and sort of spreading the gospel about creativity. And for me, from a careers perspective, that's about all I can handle because to a certain degree, it's they're both full time engagements. But again, I just figure that. In anyone's life, and everyone does this in their own way, of course, doesn't mean everyone needs to do the way I've done it, but I feel like everyone has a calling. Everyone has a calling. How can you make the world a better place? In a short time here, how can you change the world? And if you're not going to go do that, it's almost like, why bother? And for me, I'm just kind of in the groove. I feel so privileged to have the opportunity to make an impact on people and help make the world and our region a better place. And like I said, I couldn't be happier for that opportunity, and I certainly hope to deliver.
Good. Sounds good. So how can listeners find out more if they want to find your book, get connected with your company, Detroit Venture Capital, catch you playing jazz?
Well, the simplest thing is just visit my website, which is joshlinkner.com. It's joshlinkner.com. And I'm a very regular blogger, and there's all kinds of fun, inspirational creativity stuff there to check out. And there's links to my venture capital firm. And so that's just one spot where you can kind of, get in touch with me or anything that I'm talking about, which is just joshlinkner.com.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, this has been lots of fun. I wish we had more time. I'm excited about all the things you're doing and all the promise for, especially for the city of Detroit and the surrounding area. Thank you so much for being on the show, Josh.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Thank you for joining us tonight on The Leadership Focus, the show which gives you new ideas, interesting guests, and actionable strategies to help you be an incredible leader with a more balanced life. We hope that you've enjoyed the show. If you have, please go to blogtalkradio.com and become a friend and make us a favorite. To sign up for our free newsletter with more tips and strategies you can use, go to focuscoaching.net. That's focuscoaching.net on the web. Until next time, this is your host, Lisa Pasbjorn, urging you to be a better leader.